Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first episode of MLB Diamond Talk Coast to Coast of May 2021. And for the people who are loyal and listening, I thank you. I wanted to do, number one, a welcoming for a new partner of mine, a really, real well-accomplished author of Pittsburgh sports and many other things, and a Pittsburgh native, David Finoli. David, thank you so much for coming on, being a part of this, and being my new partner.
I'm very excited for it, and certainly be great. It is great to be on with you. I've been very excited myself for today to come, and we have a real exciting guest to boot.
Yes, we do. And before we introduce our guest, I also want to thank my partner of the last year, Damian McGlynn, who is an absolute breeze to work with, and I thank him so much. The show wouldn't be where it is now without him. But without further ado, everybody, I want to introduce another great guest. And he is one of the more interesting people that we've had on because of his past, and I can't wait to bring him forward. We have Randall Arms on with us now tonight on MLB Diamond Talk Coast to Coast. Coach, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Mike. And also, thank you, David. And also, I want to give a big thank you to MLB Diamond Talk to Coast to Coast for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure, Coach. And I call you Coach with affection. You and I have talked off and on for several months. Mm-hmm. Randall, and I'm going to call you Randall probably once, and that's it. You are the epitome of what this show is about when we started. Somebody that I knew the name, but I didn't know enough about you. And we try to educate our fans, young and old. And you have a remarkable story. And you, like I said, you are the epitome of a coach and what baseball, why baseball is so great and why our show we love doing so much, because we get to hear great stories. Now, without further ado, I want to give a little bit of a breakdown, like we do for all of our guests, and then I'm going to ask you some questions, and then my great new partner is going to take it away and ask you some of his own. But what I wanted to introduce everybody to you is that your path to baseball in general was a little bit different from a lot of people. I read from your bio that you came from a farming background. Your family was in farming. And then you also moved around quite a lot. And I can imagine, and I know I read this, but I want you to tell our listeners as well, it couldn't have been easy, even loving baseball, finding places to play when you were traveling like you did, moving from place to place.
Correct. It made it really hard.
So, like, what I wanted to ask you was, you know, as a kid, I loved playing baseball. Now, obviously, I didn't get to the level that you did or the level that you're at now. But I was fortunate enough to grow up in one area and play Little League and everything. That was not the normal thing for a young Randall Arms, was it? How did you, from moving around, how did you get to play games and honestly stay fresh and sharp to get to the level that you did? Without having consistency in your life like that?
Yeah, it was really hard. It started out, though, when I was probably around seven. A country boy, of course. We would always everybody would – this was like kind of a movie. Everybody would walk into the baseball field or the school grounds, mostly the school grounds, and had a huge field with multiple cages. And – it was like kids coming from everywhere with their bat and their glove, or their glove slot on their bat and over their shoulders, and walking, you know, from whatever direction they lived. And we'd all come to a meeting area. And on the weekends, mostly in the summer times, we tried to do it towards the evening because of the temperature. Where I lived was pretty hot. I was out of the Imperial Valley. So we focused on swimming in it during the day when it was hot, going home, grabbing our bat and our gloves and a ball, heading back to the field because it was right next by where the swimming pool was, and playing ball until we couldn't see no more. And we did that quite a bit, and also at the same time playing Little League. It was pretty good. I started out playing really well, but to go back up a little bit, when I was like around 7 years old, my first sport wasn't baseball. It was actually football because my whole family was in football. And it was just kind of, it seemed like it was brainwashing to me, to be honest with you, because I really didn't want to focus on football, but I did. And got to know it really well. And I had an older brother playing football, and he was like 8 years older than me, so he was like junior high, high school, getting into there and doing really well. So I started out to give it a try. And I was in my very first game, and scrimmage practice for a little while. I didn't really have any problems with it, but when I got my first game and I got hit my first time, I saw colors that are so bright, more colors than I thought there was in the world flashed in my head. I decided this wasn't my sport. So I went back to the coach I wanted to sit out. And he let me sit out, and after the game was over, I took my equipment off, flopped me, and gave it to the coach and said, I'm done. I'm not playing the sport. And he's like, well, you should stay in sports or something like that. And I said, yeah, I'm thinking about going to go check out baseball. So,
yeah.
I went over to baseball, and I played my first game or practice. I was practicing, and the coach was like, hey, you got an arm. I'm just going to throw this catcher. So I started throwing the catcher, and I was hitting my target really well. And so he made me a pitcher. And that year, the first 2 years there, we dominated, and it was pretty cool. But the main reason why I was a good pitcher was because when I would walk into school up on the farm, I would like pick a block, and I was always trying to hit a wooden pole or a metal pole. And I was good at it, actually. I could know it, and I'd be all happy, and that got me psyched in the morning. That was my practice. And sometimes I jog to school, sometimes I walk. The days I walk, I would throw rocks, and it worked really well. And we had a farm, too, so we had the property. We had the land to be able to play. And I had a younger brother, a couple of them, actually. And we'd go out and play and throw ball back and forth, hit the ball back and forth. We hit the ball as hard as we could, and we still couldn't get out of the property. So it was pretty fun to have that opportunity.
Wow. You know what? You're just telling that story. Like, some people don't understand. I always say that baseball to me is romantic because the grass, the smell of the grass, the sun, you know, being out there. You just told me the baseball version of Hoosiers. And I love that. That to me, I can paint a picture seeing what you just told us. And that's why I love doing this show, because I always wanted to be where people sat and formed their own picture of what was going on. And that's awesome. Now, Coach, I read that you worked in high school for the Texas Rangers. Now, how did you do that?
One season, that was a fluke also, because what happened was that there was suddenly, as I came older, becoming a teenager, I was starting to get in some trouble. And nothing major, but my mom decided she's going to, I know I was in trouble because I didn't really want to be at home. I was kind of against the grain with everybody. So I ran off a lot, and that created a problem. So my mom decided to call my real dad and told me I had to come live with him in Texas. And I was starting high school again. So I went over to move with them. My older brother drove me all the way up there and introduced me to my dad because I haven't seen him since I was four. And we that side of the family, it was just cool. I got to meet that side of the family, got to know him and everything. I was there for a couple of years, and I actually had kind of long hair a little bit too. My dad was ex-military. Navy and Air Force, so working for Lockheed at the time, if I remember right. And so it was, of course, marched me down to the barber shop, cut my hair all off, took me into high school, and I had to go to Arlington High, and I can't remember the other high school, the one I actually should have went to, but Arlington had ROTC Air Force. So my dad signed me straight up for two classes and to catch me up and told me how to get a job.
Wow.
So I had a stepmother, same age as me, and he also had to get a job. So my stepbrother was supposed to be going for the job. He heard about it. And
wow.
He was taking the car, and I wanted to tag along. Anytime he took the car, I have to go with him. That was the deal, so he could take the car. And that one time, he decided to burn me off and not let me go, but I was persistent. And got all cleaned up, and I went with him. We went to the stadium, and we applied for the job. And it was basically just about Andy running around doing stuff, team, I was in multiple jobs. I had so many different things going on. But when I went to apply for it, he didn't get it, not his. And
wow.
So that caused a little problem between us, really. Actually, I don't even think we even talked after that already. But it was a dream for me. And I took it after high school, and then after my class was over in high school, I was booking my bike, all the way to the stadium, all these stadium. I think it's the old one now, they built the new one. And I would get there 2 hours, 3 hours early and start working and hustling. And then when the game started, kind of got to relax there and watch the game. That was really cool. From any angle I wanted, to be honest with you. And then after the game, things start cleaning up. You know, honestly, I could have been part owners with Red Man Tobacco on a bag that I picked up in the dugout and stuff, cleaning up. But, of course, I tried it. I'm a young teenager, and that's a whole other story. So, trying to go home and eat my tobacco for the first time, and couldn't handle it, and I think I swallowed some. Passed out of someone's yard and got a cop with a flashlight in my eye telling me to get up and go home. And but it was cool. And one time I was going home, I had to sell my Texas Rangers hat to get a ride home. That was a deal for the guy. But it was great working there. What was really even great was, remember, my first time ever seeing a stadium was Angel Stadium. All right. And the Angels are in the same exact division as the Rangers. So, where do you think I was when the Angels showed up? I was over on the Raiders side. And some of the Raiders and people would say, what are you doing over there? I had to tell them the story, man. I'm from California. My first game, they're my team. And they kind of called me a traitor after that. But it was cool. And went through that season, and then that was my second year there. I ended up going back to California and started coming back here and starting over my life here. That was another part of my movie. Yeah.
Wow.
But it was a good memory. It paid off in the future. When I started going to Anaheim Stadium, after I got back, I made some good connections, and it worked really well for me. Until it worked, I had a great time until Disney bought it and all the doors got closed. That's okay.
I can imagine.
That's another story.
I am fascinated with the way your high school time went, your school time went, that you got into play ball in junior college. And did you play much in high school? I'm sorry, I'm not trying to make it a repeat.
Yeah, I really didn't get a lot of playing, and what I did do, though, I stayed in shape. I was running 5Ks and 10Ks and doing my routine. That thing nobody could take away from me, you know what I mean? And I can do that anyway. So I always maintained my routine, so anytime I got to play, I'd try to play at my top level. And so I was always prepared, so that was cool. And it did open doors for me, like at a junior college. Not having a whole lot of high school time under me, it created a problem because I had to focus on work a lot. And I remember my dad stuck me in office. He wanted me to go to the Air Force, is what he wanted. His goal was that. And we only had one goal. And so I wasn't able to play ball. That was another obstacle in my way. So I focused on it, though, and his ROTC, and almost the game was brainwashed, I feel like. He almost got me to sign up, and I went to a recruiter and everything. But I decided at that point, then at the last minute, no, I'm going to school. I want to play ball. So my dad never talked to me again after that. True story. Never talked to me again. seriously. We passed in the hallway. He wouldn't say nothing to me. It offended him. It hurt him really bad. And it hurt me too, but I had to be strong. It was me. I had to live my life. So
yeah.
I went to college, did it anyway. And I went twice, and actually junior colleges, associate degree, but I did it. And my first year, I went to go play ball and tennis, by the way. That's when I was in middle school, I played tennis instead of baseball and swimming, and I was really good at it. And I actually took second place in a championship my junior, my middle school year. And did really well in that, did really well in swimming, won a bunch of awards and stuff like that. So I was going in a lot of different directions with my life and sports, but my main goal was always baseball. I really wanted to coach it, a player and coach it. So I focused on that when I got into the junior college. I was doing tennis and baseball and seemed to be having a lot of fun at it. And I felt a little fortunate because that season, I was the only local boy picked for the team in my college, junior college there, because they picked all of Las Vegas kids, if I remember right, and brought them in. And it was kind of a joke. I still never know if this is true or not, but they told me, the players told me, hey, you got a beach? And I'm like, what? And he goes, yeah, the coach told us you have a beach here. That's why we came. And I'm like, dude, you're 120 miles east of the ocean, and at 420 below sea level, there's no beach here. And he's like, no, he says there's a beach. And I go, okay, did he give you the name? He goes, yeah, Heber Beach. Heber Beach. Dude, that's a little sand dune off to the side of a canal over here.
Wow.
And he says, well, I guess he's enlightened you. We have a beach. And so I ended up being an escort to the Vegas kids, taking them up to San Diego, introducing them to the beach. So that worked off really well. Yeah, but I played one season with them, wasn't really strong. My arm was starting to actually start bothering me. And maybe because of lack of good trainers, my arm started hurting, and so I stopped for a little bit at the end of the season. And then when it started back up, I decided not to go back to the team. I got an offer to go play in Mexicali, and had an amateur level, and they wanted to pay me for it, like $50 a game. So not really having a whole lot of money in the student, I took the offer and went over there and played. And we played there for a couple years, and then after that, I decided to go to the team. I did do a little bit of golf ball here and there, but I decided my goal was to coach because my arm was hurting me too bad. And they wanted to give me surgery, and I didn't want the surgery. And you got to remember, at one time I was young and buff. So I'm a big young buff kid, you know, and my buddy next to me was a pitcher, and same thing, but had a big scar on his right shoulder all the way around. And I'm just like, no, I'm not going to live with that. I still want to stay in baseball, so what do I do? You know, coach. And then my high school, first high school, I come from, remember, from the Pearl Valley, the Delta, and the first high school coach there, he was actually the one that introduced me to going to Mexicali and playing. And I told him, you know, hey, what's going on? And I prefer to coach. So he invited me over to my high school and coach over there for a couple seasons, and then I started my baseball from there.
Now, Coach, can I ask you, number one, I wanted to ask you, how was it playing in Mexico? Or was it a big change for you?
I played for about three seasons, and I was a pitcher. We did really well, actually. That leads into a whole other story. When my third season there, we actually started winning. And let me tell you a little story that got us, the reason why I bring this up, is when the first couple of seasons, we were a lot of gringos on the team. That means white kids. And so we're playing against Mexican umpires and Mexican players. So we had that against us. And we were really frustrated. We were mediocre competing. And we were a lot of outs and stuff, and we were frustrated with umpires, of course. It didn't stay still like that. But so that got frustrating. But we had a manager that was from U.S., in De La Rosa. He lived in Imperial Valley side. And then we got an assistant manager, coach. He was a gringo living on the Mexican side of Mexico. And they had this team and played in the amateur level, we call it here. And so I played in it, and Mexico is a lot more competitive, I'm going to tell you, in baseball. They actually had a very, they'll pay you at a very young age to play ball over here. And the better you are, the more you can get. And that's a whole other story when you start to get to the AAA level and their pay. It blows your mind. But so I played over here for the first couple seasons, and we didn't do that well, like I said. So the manager finally told me, hey, you want to win, you know, the next year? And we're like, yeah, we want to win. How? We know we're good enough. We're just these umpires. He says, well, then you know what? I'm going to teach you to hit everything for the whole team. I want you to swing at everything. There's no strike zones. If it's 3 feet above you, you're going to swing and hit it. And if it's down on the ground, and you're going to take cricket. And it was like, what? And so we practiced everything but a good pitch and hitting them and burning. And when we ran faster than we usually ran. We had to be a little faster, and we can't leave it up to the umpire. So that third game, we went in there and did that sort of playing, and it worked. It actually worked in the playoffs. So we're going to Tijuana, and they just have a new stadium. It's about 3 years old, I think, at the time. And I never heard of it until I walked up on it. And basically really didn't see it after we went to a tournament there. We played our tournament and won it, too. And so it was really cool playing in this brand-new professional-style field after coming out of Mexicali, and most of the fields were dirt and had dugouts with palm tree leaves over the top of it and stuff like that. And so, and no outfield. Sometimes the field was no outfield. I played right field one time, and I regretted it, and the coach regretted it too. And the ball got over my head, and I think it went all the way to the highway. And I think they were having lunch when I came back. I'm not sure.
Wow.
It was a long time. But so we never played there again. And we played in that tournament, won it in that field, and left. I never saw it again for probably 40-something years. And until I met my second wife and got married and moved to Tijuana, again, that's a whole other story. But that's what happened down there. And I got paid a few dollars a week to play down there.
That sounds good. Now, normally at this point, I switch over to my partner. Since it's my brand-new partner, I want to introduce everybody again to my new partner, David Finoli. David,
hello, David.
You take it over, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much. Awesome story, Coach. Very interesting how you fought your way through there. One thing that just fascinated me as I was looking through this, how did you hook up with Team Pakistan for the World Baseball Classic qualifier?
Everything was luck, really. When I moved to Mexico, back a little bit before we get to Pakistan so you understand why I was talking with them. I moved to Mexico. I became a friend set me up because all my coaching background I had by then and all those years. I did high schools and little leagues and travel ball teams and adult league teams and stuff like that. And so a friend of my wife's at a university over here had needed a pitching coach. And so I happened to be moving into Tijuana because my second wife got homesick and wanted to move back to Mexico. So we decided, I had a choice basically, divorce her or move to Mexico with her. Well, I didn't want to get a divorce. So I didn't want to move. And I was born on the border, and so I'm a border baby, and I grew up around the Mexican culture, so I know it really well. So it wasn't like a culture shock for me. So it was fairly easy, even though I really honestly, at first I didn't want to do it, but I love my wife enough, and I respect her country and her people and her, that I'm going to go. I'm going to go and move to Mexico. So we moved to Tijuana. We had a house here. I know you guys hear a lot about stories about Tijuana, and I'm sure they're true, but I haven't seen most none of it. be honest with you. And I've been here 6 years. Maybe because it's not my world and I'm not around it. Maybe, you know, I'm lucky. I don't know. But I'm enjoying myself here. I like living here. I have great neighbors. They think I'm some kind of celebrity, to be honest with you. It's like barbecues for me and stuff and introducing me and autographs and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool. And then I'm going to tell them, you know, hey, calm down. But it's all cool. But I started living here and working at the university and as a pitching coach for them. I took the offer and working really well. The kids are very well good ball players. And the reason why is because they go to the U.S. and play a lot over there. We put in universities over in the U.S. and scrimmage games and stuff because eventually they want to break into the NCAA. But back to what you asked me, so I got into Mexico and I started coaching in Mexico and I've done some of their youth international team. And I'm actually going to go to another one, Hermosillo, in the last week of July. We're taking 17, 18-year-old Mexican team to play in the tournament there. I was off last night, by the way. And I said yes to it. But I started focusing on other countries. And I want to try to start helping other countries develop their baseball. But it had to be countries that were not being recognized, not being looked at. Everybody wants to go to Venezuela and coach. Everybody wants to go to Puerto Rico. Everybody wants to go to Cuba. I see that all day on the internet. But nobody wants to say, I want to go to Africa. Nobody says, I want to go to Pakistan. Nobody says, I want to go to India. You know, it's very almost hardly you don't hear any of that stuff. And so I started focusing on those countries and talking to them about their baseball and figuring it out and how can I help, you know, especially when the virus hit. That actually boosted it a lot, actually. And we'll get to that in a minute. But so Pakistan, even way before the virus hit, I was talking to them and the Federation Saeed, and we talked a lot and back and forth. And he asked me if I would come to the World Baseball Classic qualifier, meet him there, but do a lot of homework on Brazil. Now, I don't know if I should be saying this public, but so can you find out about the manager, the coaches, the players? So I did it. I built a portfolio up on Barry Larkin. And, oh, crap, we're in trouble type of thinking. And then I saw Steve Finley as a pitching coach. And so I it was really hard to get the players' information because they're so amateur and there's not a whole lot out there. But I'm pretty good at the internet and surfing it. And actually, my son's a computer whiz, my oldest one. So he helps me dig and find stuff that most people can't find. And I pulled as much information as I can. I pulled up batting charts, spreadsheets, every person I can find. I educated myself. You know, I knew Steve Finley a little bit. I still did a whole bunch of background work on them and videos and found out how he teaches, and I got lucky, found some recordings and videos of him talking about it, and I made notes on that and built it all up, and Barry Larkins and how what he plays and how I think he would manage a team and what you think he would do, what's his strong points, weak points, if I could find any, and I did, and I built all this up, and I took a notebook with me. And like a week before the Tucson, and I got Saeed there in the team. And while we're there, it was kind of a little chaotic, a little confusing, and they looked like they were nervous and didn't know what to do about something. And Saeed came up to me and Saeed's like, hey, you're a pitching coach, correct? And I'm like, yeah. You know, I've been doing it at the university. I've been doing it for years, you know, at the lower levels, but yeah. And he says, all right, you're the new pitching coach.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Really?
So
I seriously had to, like, go stand somewhere and think about it for a minute. Is this happening? But they didn't have much time. They rushed me inside. They rushed the whole team inside. They were getting off the bus and put me in uniform, gave me a locker, and gave me the team. Lucky, I did my homework on Pakistan, too, of course, and I had all the lineup of the pitchers and stuff like that and positions. And that helped out because a manager comes up to me like the second day and he goes, anybody got a list of the pitchers? And I'm like, I do, sir, right here. So that, I got a point there, and I'm just like, it was a different world for me because I remember I'd done amateur, lower level, high school, and there's all organizations and stuff like that, and this thing was totally organized, thought out. I call it controlled chaos, and everybody's running around, and they knew what to do, and pitchers were coming to me, hey, I got Nate here and here, and sending them to the trainer and introduce ourselves and getting to know each other, getting in the locker room, and then we went out to practice, we did that for, and then it got a little bit more comfortable as every day went on. The first night was a little tough because I had to do all my credentials, and so we left me in the lobby for like hours. And I actually thought that I think they did forget us all three pounds of you. And I was there for a long time. And then finally, I think I said something. I fell asleep on the couch. I'm talking to my wife. She's calling me. And I'm so, I'm waiting. And finally, he goes, did they bring you in your credentials? And I'm like, no. And he goes, come with me. And took me all across the hotel. And I was sitting in a box. And he's like, oh, they just forgot to give it to you. They left for dinner. And so they gave it to me. So left me out there. But I ended up getting it offside. So, of course, I can't sleep that night. So I'm talking to my wife, celebrating in the head in my room. And they set me all up. And I, but what was really cool is the next day, I come walking out, me and two of my pitchers, and we're getting really good friends. And Pakistan is they're very polite people, very polite. And the younger, all the pitchers, basically because that's what I found the most, at the hotel, would never let me open my door. I went to go open my door, and they would run in front of me and open it. And I was like, I can get my own door. And they're like, no, coach, you can't do that. And it was like, why? Well, I didn't say why, but in my head I did. But the second time we're walking and going to another door, I went up and grabbed it real quick and said, yeah, it's my turn. And they were like, they got real offended. And said, no, coach, we will get in trouble if somebody sees you open the door for us. And I was like, ooh, okay, sorry, I don't want to get you in trouble. So I got my door open for like 5 days, and it was really cool. And serving my food half the time, they treat me well. Well, and I think what it was is they started realizing I could teach them something, because the first day, the second day when we were in the bullpen training, they really couldn't throw anything but a fastball. They had they called it down ball, or the curveball, that went down and dropped. But I was like, okay, this is not going to work. We got to hurry up and do something, you know. So I started teaching them how to get the curveball to break over to play. And so we started doing that. And I was going to focus on more, but I remember, you know, a few days later, the virus has sent everybody home. Maybe baseball makes a decision to send everybody home. So we never really got to finish our training. And it was the day before we played Brazil, I think, when we got sent home.
Oh, man. Did you see in your short time there? I know you didn't have a lot of chance to maybe analyze your pitchers, but was there anybody who you thought had potential to that had professional talent could have succeeded here?
I do believe they do. Yeah, they do. They are some good kids. They're very athletic. And this one kid, the biggest, he was probably a little bit bigger. He was a little older, and of course, Wade was catching up to him, but he still wasn't fat. And he was a pitcher also. But they were all athletic, and they were all tall. I'm 6'1", and they all matched me or taller. And it was just, like, awesome. And they were very physical. They were strong. You know, all of them were really strong. And that was really cool to see that. And I believe that they were more competitive. The only thing we had on our team, actually, that was our weakest link, but there were two 15-year-old brothers, and I think it was Saeed's sons, and they're very athletic, though. One was a catcher and one was a pitcher. And so I didn't have a whole lot to do with the catcher, per se, when we worked with the pitchers, but the one I got to know a little bit, and he was really excited. He wants to come over and go to the university here. He become a dentist, and he told me his stories, and of course we're on the bus talking a lot in the hotel room. They love tea, and I think it actually was invented in Pakistan or somewhere over there, India or something like that. So they love their tea, and every time we were in the hotel room, that was another thing I couldn't make for myself. They had to make it for me. And so, and they made it perfectly when I asked. I didn't have a problem with that. And we have tea. And so these guys were always having tea with me, and so I got to know them. I got to hear their stories. And actually, a couple of them had pretty good English. And we had a couple of Pakistanis on the team that were, his family was from Pakistan, but they were actually grew up in like New York or something like that, or from that area. You got where your neighborhood is, and I hear there's a lot of them up there in Pakistan. I mean, in New York and somewhere, and so I think they came from there, and they were on our team, and so that helped a lot in the home language and English. So they became translators, and then we had a couple of coaches that actually didn't coach per se when they were there. They were the translators. Me and another American. Well, I didn't have no coaches for assistants. I think I had 25 assistants. I was the only coach. And that made it really tough, too. And trying to organize them, keep them all in order, and language barrier and stuff. But I'm not going to say words I use, but they were pretty harsh words, but in a funny way. And I would use those words, and they knew those, and they got excited and stuff like that, because they were throwing a little high for my liking, because high pitch, high throwing, it creates errors and mistakes and balls. And so I needed to focus on the throw down towards the knees most of the time. Mm-hmm. So I would say, hey, hit the catcher between the legs. If he's not wearing a cup, that's his fault. And they were like, yeah, they all excited trying to throw it hard. And it got them to throw hard, too. Well, I recorded and video recorded it so I could look at the mechanics and see, who can handle it, who can't, at what level. And I took that back to my hotel room at night, and I studied that. So I had a crash course going really fast. So when the virus hit, or it's already going, but when it hit us and actually affected us and told we had to go home, and the part of me inside of me thought that was a blessing, because now I realized what I was working it with, and I actually got to see it, and I knew where their weak points were, or at least I thought I did. So I'm going to help them try to develop it, so when they come back, maybe they'll be really competitive, and that's my dream. So I just went back home, and I went home basically reading the play, and so I went online real quick, and I started hooking up with them, and we started networking and working with videos, and I started sending videos over here. I got access to a lot of videos. I'm a member of the ABCA, and so with that, I get access to a lot of videos, pro videos, and stuff like that. And so I'm going through them and seeing what I think they need, and then sending it over to them. And they also did videos and sent them back to me of their training and the fielding, the hitting, and stuff like that. And we still do it to this day. And back and forth. And they're very proud of it. They do it really well. They sent me, I think I sent a video to you about them doing a curveball. I don't know who saw that, but the curveball, they did it really well, actually. They're so proud of it. And they have two pitches. They call the curveball. It's basically a curveball. Both of them are curveball, but one's over the plate and one's down away. But they don't call it that way. They call it a curveball and a down ball. The down ball is down and away. So I'm not going to correct these guys. I got to correct my thinking and what we call it. And what works for them, I'll work with them on it. They're working with me, I'll work with them. So we call that the down ball. And we started training online. We did that. We've been doing it ever since the virus. And also in the virus, while it was going on, of course, we were in a lockdown. So I had a lot of time on my hands. And so I basically started looking up Africa and Sri Lanka and India. And I started working with their and they're these over there and training them and teaching them and trying to help them. Our biggest problem here is supplies, the equipment. It's hard to get over there. I have right now sitting in a storage unit, one of my storage units. I have a whole bunch of equipment. I'm ready to go to Pakistan. It's been waiting for months. There's an organization out of San Francisco called They Sell Without Borders. And Juan runs it down there, a friend of mine, and he gave me a whole bunch of equipment to get to him. The first time he did, when I was going to Tucson to meet Pakistan, they were asking for equipment then. So I was lucky I was able to take a whole bunch of equipment to them, and I split it up because I had a couple of academies over there. So I gave it some to one, Saeed, and he took back with him, and then I took it to another one, and Saeed Alfredi. I gave him a bunch of it to take it back to his brother, Joel, and they run an academy over there. And now I have more equipment. But it needs to be shipped over there. But as soon as we found out how much it costs, we backed off of that one real quick. And so I'm sitting on this equipment. And then I had a friend of mine that coaches a high school down in my hometown area, Calexico, came one night all the way up just to bring a bunch of bats. And I'm holding those. I need to ship those to them. So I just keep praying that they'll come back to the U.S. for something. And when they want to, they want to come and they want to bring a like 15U, 12U, 15U, 18U teams that play over here. And they're supposed to be trying to get visas and trying to fit. We're trying to find tournaments. And they want to come to the universities and schools here. But they want to do it. They don't have the money, so they want to look at scholarships. And that's becoming a little frustrating because our own kids don't even hardly can find scholarships. So it makes it really hard and sad for me and tough, you know, that I can't help them with that. And they want my help, and I'm trying, I'm investigating it, I'm looking into it, and I just keep running into walls in that idea. But I decided that Pakistan was so nice to me that I wanted to work with them. But that's how I got involved with Pakistan.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, they seem like they're a country kind of on the verge of being a World Cup qualifier. Seems like they dominate West Asia baseball as when I was doing some research on them, but they just seem to be not able to get over the hump when it comes to Taipei and Japan. Are they getting closer?
And Korea too, dude. How many forget Korea? Korea, man. They're not in the background. I think they mostly play from third. Even for Mexico, it's hard. We couldn't beat them in Italy in the 15th tier tournament last year. They're a hard team to beat. Even when you figure out their signs, they still can beat you. But Pakistan, I think their problem is they do get some training from the U.S. and stuff like that, but not enough. I think they need more. But you got to remember, they're homegrown kids. They don't use any professionals. And basically, you don't really have them. And that's where it makes it hard for them. They want to try to get players into the minors, and that would start something. And so their goal is to get some of the players into the minors. Why they're not there yet, I don't know, because they look very competitive and look like they can compete. I think Major League Baseball should at least open the door up to a single-A division for them. And... you know, let them come down and play. But to do that, they got to figure out how they're going to communicate with them and stuff like that. You get lucky if they know either. Some do. But I think it's, be honest with you, I think it's Major League Baseball. We're waiting for their response. They're there. They know Pakistan's there. Pakistan's met some of their organizations, like the Diamondbacks and some other teams. And they've been talking about it, but I haven't really seen one really step up to the plate and say, okay, hey, we're going to take a couple of your kids on it to the single A, let's give them a try and see. And maybe that might be coming soon, because I was tipped off that the Texas Rangers is trying to go up there to Pakistan. And I was trying to hitch a ride with them, but they went quiet on me. So I guess they don't want me tagging with them. So it's okay. Pakistan's been bugging me to come up and train with them when I really want to. with the virus, the problem, and I'm still waiting for my second shot. It should be next week.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm basically stuck at home. I've been stuck in, well, when I say home, I live on, there's a baseball team called Dos Lorados. Have you ever heard of them? It's in the Mexican League. And they have two teams, one on the American side and one on the Mexican side. Well, one team, but two fields. And they switch back and forth. Well, that's me in my life. I live in San Diego. I run a company in San Diego, and my wife helps me with it. And basically, I stated that the reason why I work is so I can play baseball. You know, baseball don't pay me enough, and I really don't ask for much. So most of my baseball has been volunteer through my life, and that's the way I like it. I'm giving back. And so with that, I can't do it and pay my bills. So I need to focus
right
on a job. So I went to, that's what I went to school for many years. I got many certificates and degrees in an engineering department and building. And I wanted to make sure I got paid well so I can do it with my own boss. And
right,
it worked. And that's what I'm doing. And I got good employees and a good wife that overlooked it for me when my baseball calls. And she lets me run and do, you know, what I got to do. And I appreciate another for that.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, quickly, if you could tell me what you have a lot of certificates, a lot of experience as a pitching coach. What are three things a pitcher can expect to learn from you? What would your philosophy
be? I'm sorry, what's that?
What would a pitcher expect from your coaching? What philosophy do you have for them?
My philosophy is very basic. You know what? Stick to the basic mechanics. Don't make it complicated. And make your pitches. Aim. Now, being old school, I'm old school in that area. I'm the type of guy that will go to a fold-out chair, okay, metal fold-out chair, a plastic bucket, and stick it through that little hole in the middle right there and tell my pitchers to hit it. But first, before we get to that point, we got to figure out how to control, correct? So I make them take wiffle balls and in the bucket 5 feet away at first, and they got to practice it. And it's very basic and easy. It sounds like too simple. But it gets their mind to control how to get that ball in that bucket. And when they do that, they figure out how to throw strikes over a strike zone. So I focus on the bucket with the balls, and then the bucket gets moved farther away when you get better and better. And then finally, when you get to the point where, you know, you start to use tennis balls. And then from tennis balls, your coach is far enough away you can throw the baseball. So that's when I put the bucket into the fold-out chair and put it over home plate, and they got to hit inside of it. First thing, they get fastball and hit it down the middle. If you can't do that, how are you going to hit the corners? How are you going to control, you know, your high corners, low corners, you know, inside, outside pitches? So, and it works, and we can focus on that. That's what I teach my kids. And then also running. I really believe in running, again, old school. The kids don't like me for it. Young men don't like me for it, but it's literally proven you got to get the blood flowing to the brain. And the more you get that blood flowing to the brain, the better you're going to do out there. And especially on the cold days. You know, on the cold days, I double up their running. And by now, they know why, and they understand it. I get one at resistance a little. And, of course, I'm going to have that. And obviously, it's not in his heart like, you know, it should be. But so I focus on that, and I focus on the mechanics, and I video record them with my phone. And then I take them home that night, and I look at it and see what their mechanics are doing all the way from the tip of their toe landing to the top of their fingertips releasing the ball and what's going on with every part of their body. And then analyze where most of their pitches went and focus on that. And between the mechanics and those pitches, it tells me where their mistakes are. And then the next practice, we focus on that point. But I gotta drill into them. I find the problem in is when I start to focus on that point, they start to focus on that point. You gotta remember they're gonna focus really hard on it. They sometimes they relax on the mechanics they already know. Now, yes, it's routine, but it still needs to be done right. And sometimes they will cheat on that one area to get the other area to work, and I can't have that. They got to learn how to make all the parts of the mechanic work correctly to have a smooth motor running and the throw. My main beef is with pitchers is the first pitch to be in a strike to every batter, at least the first couple of innings. And we'll find out who, if we don't have a team we don't know and no information on, then we'll look at the batters and make a note on who swung at the first pitch and who hit and who didn't. And then we go into the 3, 4, 5 inning. We'll pitch a little different. Like maybe that batter we won't throw a strike for the first time. I have another rule, 2 strikes, no balls. I want a chin-high pitch, and you got to call for that. And you got to remember these are kids, young, and this is not professional. So professionals train and learn to knock the swing at those. These guys haven't yet. You get a few kids you can see that, you know, travel ball kids and stuff like that. And then we learn to pitch around them and figure out where is their weak point and we pitch to it. And then we come in and – but the main goal is first pitch, first strike. Two strikes, no balls. Two strikes, two balls. Sometimes I'll our two strikes, no balls, and two strikes, one ball. And sometimes a two strike, one ball, I might call a pitch and a little high. It depends, or change it, you know, and throw something in a little outside pitch or something, but we got to call for that. And I found it to work really well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Coach, that has been such an inspirational story from where you began to where you ended up. I mean, you were certainly a coach on a team that was on the edge of being a top 20 team in the world. So that's something you just got to be proud of.
Yeah, I am. I actually got it hanging on my wall in front of my office. My office is like a little museum. Again, in Mexico, the houses are small, you know, and most overall, and ours is small. We're building it and building it bigger, but so I'm stuck in this like a little closet per se. No windows, but I kind of like it that way, actually. And I have like a little museum of all of it. But in the very front, right where I sit, I have my photo of Team Pakistan and my World Baseball Classic qualifier ID and my they call it tags. They're you put them, when you put them on your uniform, they give you a belt. You put your uniform through so they can wash them. And those are hanging right there, right in the front. It's like I can stare at it every day. And it's like an honor. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, if I'm going to be going back to the team. That's not up to me. It's up to their, you know, all these baseball teams, especially at that level, are restructuring. And they want to do another vote for the coaches and the manager. Mm-hmm. And they're not saying you're not. We're not picking you, but we're going to keep our doors open and check in what's out there. So that might have been my dream, and it's gone now. Who knows? But more and more, I just try to accept it. Like, hey, it's going to come as part of baseball. And I got that week with the team. I'm training with the team. My goal has become, basically, I gained my title of international pitching coach. Because I've worked for quite a few countries now, and in Pakistan, Mexico, U.S., and Italy, worked with some other players. So I felt like I earned that title, and that's what I really liked, and then started focusing on it. But also, I do other stuff like I do blogs and stuff like that, but I'm also working for I'm an ambassador for the Association of Professional Ballplayers of America. They came to me in the middle of the virus and asked me if I would be an ambassador for them. To me, that was a great honor. I really wanted to be an ambassador, but my main goal would be a world ambassador. But I have to compete with that one. I'd have to compete with the president of Mexico. He holds that title right now through the World Baseball Classic Organization. I think I'll have a hard time with that one.
Maybe a little, but those are certainly incredible honors. Certainly incredible honors.
Yeah.
I'll throw back the mic there.
What's up?
Guys, I just wanted to thank you both. That was informative, entertaining, and just amazing. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I told you,
by the way.
What did you say, Coach?
That's just the tip of the iceberg, by the way. I have a really full life.
Coach, I talked to you over the last several months quite a few times, And I told you personally, I wanted to make sure you were comfortable on our show first, because I never want to force anybody to come on. But I knew with your background, David and I would have several shows full of topics and questions to talk to you. And it doesn't surprise me in the least. Now,
I'm not an orthodox way of doing things. Sorry for my stutter.
No, I like that. You know what? This is what we like about this show, and this is David's first show. And David, right. You were terrific, and you know, it's a pleasure doing this with you. But I got
likewise.
To listen, and I got to understand who Randall Arnes is. And you know, I actually wrote down that this sounds like a book or a sequel, Million Dollar Arms, no pun intended, instead of Million Dollar Arm. You have such a cool story. And you know what?
Hey, that guy's on my LinkedIn, by the way. The Million Dollar Arm guy, he's on my LinkedIn.
Really?
Yeah,
I'm going to tell you right now, people need to hear your story. And, you know, before we run out of time, anytime – anything happens that you want to come on, you are welcome on. You know, if something comes up and you get a position and you want to talk about it, we'll have you on anytime. Because I love just listening. I'm a baseball geek. I just listen to you talk. And, oh, my gosh, it's like, you know what, people that don't love the game don't understand. I'm sitting here thinking.
I might have a story soon for you. I became a scout for the Georgian Baseball Federation, and I've already been to two Venezuelans and a Mexican. So I'm going to get invited over there to check it all out, and they said they might be inviting me. So that's a whole other story and another time, I'm sure.
Oh, please. When you do that, and I say when, not if, you let me know because you have my information. I would love to have you on because we have other stuff to talk to you about. One of the things before we run out of time, you are my kind of pitching coach, and I love the fact that you have rules that you want to go by. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you, now, I am, like I said before we came on, I'm old school. If a guy shows up a pitcher, they hit a couple too many home runs, and the pitcher loses control of home plate, and I want somebody to get hit in the rear end. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, as a pitcher and as a pitching coach, and I know it might be different if you're doing it for Team Pakistan than back here, but would pitching coach Randall Arnes ever tell his pitcher, it's time to go reclaim your plate?
I look at it different than everybody else. They say claim it and go pick out the batter. No, I tell them the pitcher. I say pitch in tight. I say, you know what, you throw it inside really tight. You hit them, you hit them. You can hit it anyway, okay? If you don't, they're going to saw their bat off. And if they do, what do you think that ball is going to do? Not a whole lot. So throw inside, if you're that mad, throw inside, control your pitch, and take them out that way.
Perfect. I love that. You want the pitcher, you know, obviously there's always a little level of intimidation. We've had people come on, pitchers, former pitchers, that said that they knew that they didn't have the stuff to go up against, let's say, one of the greats of all time, but they competed. Mm-hmm. That's what I want my guys, I don't care if they're the most talented, I want them to know the game, and that's what I like. Now, I'm a Phillies fan by trade. I know David is a Pirates fan.
Would you say that baseball to me is pure. If you play it pure, it's great. You got a bad umpire, that kind of takes that out of it. You got a bad player, you got a bad fan, you got a bad something.
Sure.
Listen, that I'm not happy. Okay, I want to go into that game. I want to play it the way it was written, and that's a whole other story with Major League Baseball, by the way. We all have a story now with that. But I agree with some of their ideas, and I disagree, basically disagree with some of their other ideas. But that could be a whole other talk show, correct? But, kind of focus on playing old school basics. I'm not a home run guy. But to be honest with you, I do pay my amateur players and lower level players. I pay them $20 if they hit a home run in a game. I think I've had to pay $60 in one game one time.
Wow.
Well, you know, I don't care for the home run. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's old school, new school.
Well, Coach, I want to thank you so much. We're getting ready to run out of time. We're under a minute.
Yep.
David and I both want to thank you for coming on for our first show together. You are welcome anytime. And I absolutely – you have an open invitation later this year during the season. Whatever happens, Randall Arms is a friend of the show and a friend of our family here at MLB Diamond
Coast.
Thank you. Coast. And thank you so much. You be well, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I'm talking about you for that.
Excuse me?
How many tacos do I owe you for that one?
Oh, please. You just come on and you talk baseball, Coach, and we consider it fair game. Thank
God,
you so much for coming
on
tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mike, and thank you, David.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I felt comfortable around you guys.
We appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Randall Arms, for my new partner, David Finoli, for our producer, Mark Mancini, I am Mike Paternoster. This is MLB Diamond Tell Coast to Coast. And next week, our special guest is my new partner, author David Finoli. We can't wait to talk to you next week. Thank you, everybody.
Should
Have a great week.
All right.